Living on the Left Bank, written by Bohdana Romantsova, published by the Ukrainian media on January 28, 2026. I live practically on the river. The Dnipro is just 2 minutes away by bike and 4 minutes on foot, seven if the streets are iced over. This winter, for the first time in several years, the stretch of river where the sandy beach meets the rapid current froze solid. I learned this when we lost our last functioning utility, cold running water. I'll fetch some from the Dnipro, I thought. Now I know that in an emergency, it's better to take water from Lake Telbin, where ice fishing holes can be found no matter the weather. There are many bodies of water in my area, actually, and that feels symbolic. Much of what is now the Bereznyaky district, along with neighboring Rusanivka, was built on reclaimed land in the late 1960s. We're Kyiv anti-Atlantis. We rose from the depths and we don't plan on drowning. When you live on the left bank, you get used to hearing endless comments about how it's not really Kyiv. In some respect, that's true. We're like a satellite orbiting a planet. Yet, this satellite has already absorbed the suburbs and is approaching the right bank in population, if it hasn't already surpassed it. When the air raid alert sounds, it feels as though we're locking ourselves behind a massive gate, cut off from everything else. Getting from the left bank to the right becomes almost impossible. There are a few marshrutkas and their routes mostly end at left bank metro stations. The metro itself doesn't run across the bridges and the bus route has only two buses, so no one knows how long the wait will be. Taking a taxi could cost as much as a ticket to Lviv, and that is no exaggeration. So if we can help it, we prefer to stay put. The left bank is an autonomous entity. We have our own coffee shops of every tier of trendiness, our own parks, lakes and cinemas. Our cats are fluffy and brave. Our ducks don't migrate south, choosing instead to huddle together on the ice of Lake Telbin. Even our lake-dwelling turtles are a stubborn bunch, as if Darwin himself had dropped them here. On the left bank, blackouts are measured not in hours, but in days. I have not had power for 2 days, I tell my trainer at the gym. I'm on my second day now, she replies dispassionately. Neither of us will be washing our hair at home today. The surrounding neighborhoods get their power and heat either from the legendary Darnitsa CHP or from the lesser known but no less frequently targeted Vidubichi CHP. When a CHP is hit, you know it immediately. The distinctive sound of water draining from the radiators, an instant blackout across the entire neighborhood, the buzz of Shahed drones outside the window, loud explosions, then total darkness. Crossing the Patton Bridge from the right bank to the left feels like plunging into a vat of extra dark Vanta Black paint, as if it were invented specifically for our reality. Not a single light, only the monotonous hum of diesel generators. Yet behind the darkened windows, life goes on. You can still buy a potted hyacinth, how could one survive a blackout without it, right? And freshly squeezed orange juice at local supermarket. This winter, I experienced a days-long blackout for the first time. In the morning, everything seems normal. The water in the boiler is still warm, the laundry basket isn't quite full enough for a load, and there is still plenty of charge in the power bank and water in the bottles. As you leave for work, you habitually leave all devices plugged in, maybe there'll be power for at least an hour, just enough to charge them up. When you return, the EcoFlow battery is only half charged, the radiators are ice cold, and the bottles of ice have not even begun to melt. The main advantage of these 1970s era apartment blocks is their gas stoves. Their drawback is the non-existent insulation. They cool down very quickly. After 20 hours without heat, you accept the terms of your predicament and pull out a third blanket. After 30, a sleeping bag meant for harsh winter hikes. 35 hours in, the internet finally goes down. Now you're on your own and the right bank no longer exists. You walk around the apartment without a jacket, but wearing a t-shirt, thermal underwear, warm pajamas, and two sweaters. The cat, who once pretended to be independent, crawls under the three layers with you and huddles close. The thermos suddenly weighs more than it ever has, and bringing over boiling water becomes proper etiquette when visiting someone's home. Meals are dictated by which food will spoil first, and you wear whatever is warm, not whatever is clean. 40 hours in, you fashion a warming station from candles and tray. 42 hours in, you go to the hardware store to buy fire-resistant bricks. The hottest trend on Ukrainian social media, by the way. The EcoFlow power charger is an extremely convenient but heavy piece of equipment, and when there is no power at all, it becomes useless. You cannot hold this 23-kilogram thing to the nearest invincibility point to recharge it when the elevator is not running, so you accept your fate, linger at work where there is electricity, and go anywhere you're invited just to stay away from home as long as possible. By day two, social media is full of offers like, come live with us on the right bank while they fix it. You read in the news that Sadovey, the mayor of Lviv, has sent maintenance crews from Lviv to Kyiv, that boilers are on their way from Kherson, and that cogeneration plants are on their way from Zaporizhia. My friend in a nearby high-rise have it even worse. They have parrots. For some reason, these proud descendants of dinosaurs never learned to grow a thick coat of fur like my cat. And they get terribly cold. In winter, my friends always try to use a heater, not for themselves, but for the parrots, obviously. No one ever taught us how to keep parrots warm during a blackout. In the buildings a little further down the neighboring street, water in the pipes has frozen. They have been without heat for a week and the temperature inside has dropped to zero. Near the Lvobrezhna metro station, you can see the damage from a drone strike on a brand new condo complex. The last sentinels of the night watch, the knife and the fruit vendors outside McDonald's, have not shown up for work for the first time in my memory. It's minus 17 degrees Celsius outside. At the gym, I take off my t-shirt, cause it's plus 16, and I warm up very quickly. The Left Bank is divided into smaller clusters of neighborhoods, each forming its own community. During blackouts, this proves especially useful. Yes, it was the Left Bank where people gathered outside for a barbecue during a power outage. We are the ones who have online groups for finding things lost in the dark, learning how to warm up your apartment with a pot, salt, and stones, or even buy homegrown potatoes delivered to your floor. Though unclear if that offer still stands during blackouts. At night, when my phone's battery drops to 10%, I check the group chat for news. The latest message reads, "Hi everyone, I'm taking orders for holiday cakes." This is classic Left Bank. Here, people adapt quickly to blackouts and to what the authorities call a humanitarian catastrophe. Nothing can stand in the way of baking cakes. I'm finishing writing this column the morning after yet another massive drone and missile attack. At night, the garage cooperative nearby was burning and there were explosions. Once again, we have nothing. No water, no lights, no heat. Every small, almost automatic action like washing your hands or brushing your teeth now takes three times longer than it used to. Perhaps this isn't the life I would have imagined for myself, but it is my life, and it goes on. I can hear a sparrow singing outside, and it's only minus 7 degrees Celsius. Spring seems to be just around the corner.